I think we need to do a more Americanized intro. Hey, this is the Audio Drama on Fire podcast. Oh yeah, I'm so stoked to be here. Yeah, Hogan knows best. Except on the subject of racial equality, allegedly.
Hello and welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. My name is Robert and I'm here with Matthew.
Bananas.
And we're here every week to bring you a little bit of information about the world of audio drama production. We're talking hints, tips and interviews with the experts. What's going on this week, sir?
Well, back in the car. Been a while since we've done this again. It's been a bit hectic lately with both our day jobs, so we don't get many chances at the moment to do this. But that'll change shortly because I'm changing jobs.
My goodness.
Yeah, we'll get a chance to sit down and have a chat a bit more often. You know, good to keep it mixed up with the interviews as well.
Yeah.
You know, the survey found in favour of us talking. I think it was like 60-40. The survey we did recently.
Wow, kind of a close thing then.
I was like, oh, stop.
Oh, you. Yeah.
Yeah, surprised at that, but never mind, it's good to sit down. I do enjoy having a wee chin wag about audio drama. That's after all why we started the podcast.
Yeah, so. Definitely, and maybe we can get to the pub more often as well.
Yeah, that'd be good, more drunk episodes.
Yeah.
So the crux of the discussion today, what does your world sound like? Quite a big question, really.
Yeah.
But this kind of stems from a thought I had recently, and when I was quite young, say between the ages of maybe 4 and 9, we'll say, We used to go on holiday with my family down to Yorkshire in England, on the east coast of England, to Whitby, a town we mentioned, I think it was a few months ago, because I'd went back down there.
Yeah.
Nice wee town on the seaside, and it's got a lot of fishing. There's a river runs through it. It's got an abbey. It was the place that inspired Bram Stoker to write Dracula.
Absolutely.
And when I was younger, and I used to go there on holiday, and with it being close to the sea, there was quite a distinctive soundscape about the place. And I noticed this, you know, when I was a kid, and I wasn't really aware I was noticing it, but it was, you know, the seagulls and the boats and the water just had a very distinctive sound. And what I used to do, because, you know, when you're that age, like Whitby's pretty close to here nowadays, you know, we could probably drive there in about 4 or 5 hours. But
yeah, definitely.
When you're a 5 or 6 year old kid, anywhere over 50 miles is like a world away.
Yeah.
And the fact that we went there once a year, it was this far off mystical place, you know, that was completely unachievable apart from the 2 weeks in July that we went. And up here, you know, you've got a lot of coastline and you've got seagulls and things like that as well. And sometimes I used to say we'd be down the coast here and I used to shut my eyes. It sounds a bit sad, but, you know, I was a child. I used to shut my eyes and try and pretend and use the soundscape to pretend I was on holiday in Whitby.
Right.
Because a lot of the sounds were the same, you know, you had the sea, you had the seagulls. And when I went back down there recently and I was aware of this, and we were walking over the bridge going from one pub to another, because that's pretty much all we did when we were down there. And I just sort of closed my eyes for a second, probably looked like a right oddball. And I was just trying to take in that soundscape, and I was aware of, you know, what sounds make this setting, even though it's a real setting. I was thinking of it in relation to building a fictional soundscape or building an audio drama soundscape. And of course, there were the sounds that make that soundscape, you know, like I said, the water, the seagulls, the breeze, things like that. You could kind of hear the, you know, the boats, the noise they make when they're kind of floating in the water, when they're tied up.
Clanking and the odd boing, yeah, going off, yeah.
And just the general chatter and things like that. And further down you had like arcades, you've got chip shops. Don't know what the chip shops would sound like, but
chips, here, get your chips.
Also you had a road which was pretty busy.
Yeah.
And I became aware that, you know, if I wanted to recreate this soundscape in an audio drama, if I wanted to set something here, the road, even though, you know, the road is there, it interrupted the soundscape, if you know what I mean, because when you just listen instead of look, that road sounded a lot bigger and busier than it actually was. And it got me thinking, you know, when you're creating a soundscape, whether you're recreating the soundscape of a real place or creating, you know, a fictional soundscape, whether it's a space station or a post-apocalyptic town, you have to pick and choose the sounds that will contribute to building that picture in your listener's head.
Yeah.
So you don't necessarily use all the sounds that, you know, you might see. And it comes back to what we've said quite a lot about, you know, using your ears rather than your eyes for this sort of thing, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I have to say, even at 4 years old, you were shunning popular culture in favour of audio theory. I'm very impressed. Yeah, if you were going to create a seaside, a beach coastal town audio experience from scratch, there's no way you'd be thinking, right, well, I've got to get the busy road in there. You know, you'd be thinking, right, the boats and the revelers walking along the boardwalk or whatever. So it's funny how reality kind of gets in the way of what we see as our experiences and our dreams that we want to build, you know. So difficult. And maybe it is worth taking the time to visit similar places to the ones you want to build, apart from space stations, maybe. In order to get a real idea of what exactly is making up your world. And I guess that's why Foley was born, wasn't it? Because in TV and movies, doors don't sound like doors. That's why you'll recognise... Do you ever get this, where you'll recognise a sound effect? Not because it stood out, but because you recognise it maybe from a database, and there it is. We were watching Breaking Bad, and the guy was coming out the back door, and the way it sort of went, that three-point kind of click thing, and the swing of the door... I was jumping up and going, that's a sound effect, I've got that on the hard drive. And Tracy was like, yeah, so what? Yeah, but it's, why didn't they just have the door make the noise? Why did they have to paint another noise on? But there you are.
Yeah, and similarly, you know, I recorded a clip yesterday when I was at work. I wanted to play it on the show, but it was on my phone and it just didn't come out very good at all. But I wanted to demonstrate something because... what I was looking at, you know, it was quite a nice summer's day and I'm working on a golf course at the moment, and what I could see was a lovely blue sky and a big golf course, and there was golfers on the tee about to tee off.
Mm-hmm.
And I was recording this. So what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing were very different because I was actually standing out in the rough. There was a road behind me and... there was actually quite a lot of flies buzzing around. I think it was because I was a bit sweaty because I'd been shoveling sand. But what you could hear in the recording was quite a lot of flies buzzing, which in audio demonstrates to me maybe like a dead body or a, you know, pestilence sort of decay, rotten food. So the flies, although they were there, you know, and this was a realistic soundscape, well, it was a real soundscape, they didn't contribute to, you know, the image I was seeing. And also a car drove past behind me, and I don't know why, but it tooted its horn. Maybe it wanted to annoy the golfers or something. So,
yeah.
Again, if we wanted to create the soundscape of a golf course, we wouldn't include those sounds because not only do they not contribute to what you're, the picture you're trying to paint, they actually detract from it because people are thinking, well, you know, that car has to have a purpose. I think... you know, we reference this quote a lot, the Mark Twain quote about the difference between fiction and reality.
I was just thinking that. Yeah.
Is that fiction has to make sense.
Yeah.
If you are picking and choosing sounds, actually, you know, there's a lot of good books on this subject that I've read recently. I'll put them in the show notes, but there's the Location Sound Bible by Rick Vyers. There's the Foley Grail. I read that as well. And there's Audio Theatre by Robert Mott. There was actually a good bit in that where he wrote about if you were creating a funeral. He said if you went to a funeral in real life, I'm just paraphrasing the book here, but he said 2 blocks away, say there's a football game and there's a brass band playing at this game, And he said in real life, this is just an unfortunate coincidence. You know, there's a funeral and down the road there's a brass band playing. It's just one of those things. It's not disrespectful. It's just, you know, different things happen in a town. But if you created this in an audio drama and you put the brass band in there and you tried to justify it by saying, well, you know, these things just happen.
Aye.
I'm afraid that's not really acceptable, because you can't just throw that in there because it could happen. There's just no point to it, and it would make it sound absurd, and that's the point he was making in the book.
Well, that's it. Imagine if the platoon leader, he's in the middle of rousing his men to go for one last charge, because if they can get up that hill and take it, it means the entire army can converge in this one spot and then win the war. And then he sneezes midway through his sentence. And it'd be like, sorry, what I was going to say was really good there. So come on, let's do it for our mothers, our... Oh, God. Has anybody got a tissue? So, you know, you just can't have these things. People stumbling as they go in the door, you know. That's the thing about a created universe. Everything is created either to be obvious or indirectly a layer of the universe that you want. So it's difficult not to have something that sticks out. It's got to have a reason. And if not, then it's conspicuous by its non-absence.
Just what you mentioning a sneeze there, I've always been aware of this, and it used to annoy me, and that's contradictory to what I'm saying here now, but it used to annoy me that there was never a sneeze or a cough in a TV show unless it was needed.
Yeah.
And it always annoyed me, and, you know, looking back, obviously, there was no need to have one because it didn't make any sense to just throw a cough in there or a sneeze in there.
Imagine in a horror film when somebody says, oh, I'm just going to the bathroom. He's dead!
Yeah, but he's actually just needing the toilet.
Yeah, that thing we all do several times a day. It's no big deal, honestly.
So, I was up north at the weekend for my anniversary. It sounds like I just go on holidays. But
that's not the case.
But we went up the, you know, up north. I'm not quite sure you could consider it the Highlands. Up Aberfeldy, Kenmore Way, is it?
If it's past Perth, then it's the Highlands.
The Highlands, yeah.
Because Perth is the gateway to the Highlands.
Yeah. And up there, you know, the scenery is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And it's got that sort of Tolkien fantasy look about it in places, where you've got the vast mountains and forests and waterfalls, yeah, and things like that. And
like
it really
New Zealand
is
in a bad mood.
Yeah. And, you know, when I was up there and you're looking at this setting, and I was thinking to myself, whilst drinking a pint, obviously, mm-hmm, I was thinking to myself, you know, if I visualised this scene, and say I wanted to set some sort of fantasy audio drama, which coincidentally we are creating, mm-hmm, at the moment, if I wanted to use this kind of setting, what sounds would I need to paint this in the listener's head? Because really, you know, you've got your generic backgrounds where you've maybe got the breeze and the birds tweeting. You might have a generic background where it's raining. And the question struck me when a writer or producer visualises a scene, is it up to them to micromanage exactly what they see and try and make the listener see it? Or is it just to provide the listener with enough to build the scene in their own head? So it's, you know, how much involvement should we have or try and have on the listener's experience? Should you be trying to really micromanage it? Or, like I say, is it up to the listener?
Well, it's up to the producer to somehow convey that experience that they are walking in the woods and so on. You know, in Aftermath, we solved it by having two of the characters say, come on, let's go and do a perimeter check of the farm. So instantly you're thinking, well, it's outside. And then when it does cut back to that scene, they're walking, you can hear the grass swishing beneath their feet, and they eventually approach a stream, and we have the stream fade in. So we used the stream. There didn't need to be a stream there other than the fact to convey we're outside or the toilet's broken. But they were outside. So, you know, you use whatever tools you can. Maybe you need to have a bit of narration, and so the two mighty heroes trekked through the forest, which didn't have as much sound as you'd think, so therefore that's why I'm telling you that's what they're doing. Or even music. The right piece of music that conveys an outdoor theme or a forest theme or whatever the scene actually is. You have to use all the tools as much as possible, and usually the trick is without it seeming conspicuous and expositional. So not always easy.
Yeah, and the dialogue, I think, comes into play as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, the two characters might stop because one of them wants to tell them about, you know, that. See that big mountain up there? Let me tell you what happened to me 10 years ago when I was up that mountain. It was brilliant. Great fun. Camping trip. Got really drunk. But, yeah, the dialogue, you know, as long as it's not too expositional,
yeah,
will play a role there as well. And, again, it depends on how much you want to put in there, you know, how much do you, because I think people should visualize the scene in their head when they create it.
Yeah.
And it depends on, like, how vital is every detail that you want to see, you know, is it vital for the listener to see these details as well? If so, you're going to have to find a way to convey them. If not, maybe just leave it up to them, give them just enough and let them do the rest.
I think there is a fine balance as well, because there's only so much that you can process just using your ears and your brain, you know, rather than your eyes drinking everything in one quick glance, you know. And the more you're drinking in from the atmosphere of the background, maybe you're more missing something in the dialogue. It depends. You've got to give them a chance, the listener, to really take in what's going on. And even if that means just something loudish near the beginning of the scene that then dips down, in order to allow the dialogue to happen, then maybe, you know, that's the way to balance it out. I don't know. It really depends on the situation, I guess.
And there's two situations that I mentioned earlier, you know, the sci-fi space station type scenario and the post-apocalyptic Earth scenario.
Yeah.
Friend of the show, Brian Lincoln, obviously he's producing a show on board a spaceship. And he's mentioned this before, that he faces the challenge of, you know, he needs consistent sounds in his story world, you know, the background sounds. But at the same time, it wouldn't be enough just to have this same control room sound over, you know, 12 episodes. You know, everything just has this same soundscape. So I suppose he faces a challenge of balancing consistency with, you know, keeping it fresh. I don't envy him in that sense, because I remember how challenging we found it in Aftermath. We had this world where
it was sterile.
Yeah, everyone was dead, and you have to use you know, you've got things like crows. Crows are always handy. Crows never die. They just eat bodies.
Yeah.
The odd dog bark and the odd stray dog. But again, even then, you know, if you stick a dog in there, it's almost like that has to be part of the plot.
And it has to have been suddenly silenced in the distance, telling you that there's something coming.
Yeah, like a gunshot or something.
A monster's got on it.
Yeah. You know, it was good to bring a bit of rain in. Rain gave it a bit of variation, and it was set in Scotland, so...
Yeah, so it was realistic.
Realism. So, like you say, it's good to have soundscapes as well, musical soundscapes. Just that, you know, very minimalist soundscape. It's just enough to sort of present this picture of bleakness, hopelessness, sorry. And, yeah, it's just a combination of things, isn't it? Your dialogue, your music, your soundscape, the sounds that you're selecting that are immediately around the characters.
Yeah.
Dirk Maggs described this well when he was talking about building a soundscape. He talked about the layers, you know, your immediacy, maybe the street around the characters, and then you've got the city. And then you've got, you know, the world beyond that, the sky, aeroplanes, whatever. So it's building a world in layers, isn't it? A bit like an onion.
Yeah, and it goes back to what we've probably said a few times before, is that if you're going to use whatever your immediate sounds are, whether it's music leading into the scene or even the chatter of the background, whatever you use, you have to bear in mind that is exactly what you're using to tell the listener, consciously or subconsciously, what to expect, what it's about, the mood, the theme, the setting. So if you're using a bit of music that's medieval but jaunty, like dun 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 dun, it's probably going to be quite light-hearted. But if it's more of a willowing, haunting, keening kind of thing, then maybe that would be outside, maybe up a mountain that's kind of bleak, you know. So it's always something to be wary of. Don't just stick down any old thing. Everything you put into your audio tells a little bit of the story, or a big bit even.
And even, like, if you think about being inside a building, like, for example, you know where I live, it's a new town. It's, I suppose it would be described as brutalist architecture. You know, ex-council houses all built in the 60s, all built exactly the same. And if I wanted to set something, like, in a room in my house or one of the houses like it, something as subtle as, like, it's perfectly feasible, and I don't, but it's perfectly feasible that I could have a big grandfather clock in my house.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. I wish I did, actually. But if you put that in audio, the grandfather clock would actually suggest to the listener a kind of, you know, grand surrounding, like a mansion or a very old house.
Maybe a bat cave underneath. You go through the grandfather clock to get to it.
So again, you know, if you wanted to stick something like that in, it's saying a lot more than it actually would in real life. You know, it's like I say, it's feasible that anyone could have a grandfather clock. But in audio, that's almost a statement, subtly or unsubtly. You know, the listener, I think, might be encouraged to imagine something that you're not trying to convey. So I suppose household items as well, they do come into it, don't they?
Yeah, it's worth realising that you have to think about what everyday objects mean to people and what they already convey in popular culture and TV, films, audio, whatever. If that thing gets used a lot for something in particular, then even though it's perfectly feasible to have it because it would be there in real life, maybe it already tells the tale to people. Like you say, having the lone crow up high that's just giving the odd squawk means there's eight dead bodies, and there are the flies to confirm it. So, yeah, it might just be a normal back garden or something, but no, you just can't have them because they are the harbingers of death. So you have to be careful. And the grandfather clock, all right, so there's eight bedrooms. Oh, no, actually, it's just a two-bedroom house like every other house. Fine. So it's something to be wary of. Maybe then go for the little, instead of the big swinging pendulum clock, you go for the little...
Yeah.
The tiny one.
The little tiny modern thing that wakes me up at 4 o'clock every morning on a work day. So I suppose in summary, questions and pointers to the listener, have a think about how much you visualise a scene when you're writing it and when you're producing it. You know, how much thought do you give to the visuals? Not just immediately around the character, but in a wider sense. You know, the world around you, or around your characters. Have a real think about what that looks like, and have a think about some of the sounds that you could pull in to help paint that picture, and also some of the sounds that, although they would be realistic, aren't adding to your scene and might actually be painting something completely different to what you want the listener to see. So have a real think about that and get in touch with some of your thoughts. You know, what have you had to consider in the past when you've made something? Have you had to make decisions? Have you had to take out sounds? I'd be really interested to hear some of your stories, because I'm sure this is you know, I'm sure this is something that a lot of people have put a lot of thought into in the past.
And don't overestimate what your brain hears but eliminates, that your ears pick up and your brain says, nah, I don't need to hear that, so I'm going to ignore it. Like you turn on a Zoom recorder in a room, you listen to the room, then you listen to what's on the Zoom and you think, my God, that's loud. I wasn't listening to that. Like a fridge freezer in the background or the traffic outside. It's amazing what your ears ignore. So it's worth trying to bear that in mind if you're going to go and listen to a particular environment in order to think about what sounds there are. It's an amazingly vibrant world out there. Literally vibrant. Because, you know, sounds are vibrations.
Right, next up on the podcast, in the rain. The rain has started. I wonder if that's been picked up by the Zoom. Probably, because everything is.
Yeah.
That gives us a good soundscape. It gives the listener a good picture of where we are in the world. Mm-hmm. Scotland. Somebody walking past with an umbrella there. I wonder how we could convey that. I suppose it's the dialogue. It's
bloody rain making me hold up this inanimate object above my head.
Right, next up on the show... Oral Stage Studios are good friends over at Oral Stage. They are producing a new show at the moment. They're creating a new show called Otherworldlies, and they're running a wee competition. And I have the details right here. It says, win a copy of Isotope Nectar. I believe Isotope Nectar's a vocal plugin. Mm-hmm. I'm fairly certain that's what it is. And it says, Isotope Inc. has teamed up with Oral Stage Studios to bring you Otherworldlies, the Walla competition. Here's the skinny. The prize is the Isotope Nectar 2 Standard Edition, which is worth $229. The deadline is midnight Eastern Standard Time on August the 15th, 2015. The entry fee is $5. Now, what do you have to do? As far as I'm aware, this is a competition to come up with background conversations, background dialogue for the scenes in this audio drama. And I had a wee look on the Oral Stage website, and the links to this will be in the show notes. And producers can use characters from their own audio dramas and just have these wee background conversations, as long as it fits into the, you know, the story world that they are that they have created, obviously. So this is a great wee competition. It'd be good fun. I think we should certainly put an entry in ourselves as well. And $5 to enter, like I say, and you could win this great plugin. I know Isotope stuff's very good. I've got some of it on my own computer, so
right.
Be a handy thing to have. Should we win? I don't think we will, but good luck to all who enter. Get those entries in before the 15th of August.
15th of August, that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, I think we could come up with some conversations.
Yeah.
Maybe revive some Aftermath characters.
Yeah. And have them talk about breakfast cereals or whatever, you know? Or something.
Right, details all included in the show notes over at audiodramaproduction.com. What's next on the podcast?
So, let's talk about Valenhai, Matthew. Because there's been a few, not changes as such, but we're adjusting our focuses between us. I've been working closely with Mr. Steve Schneider from the Boston area of the United States of America. And we've been doing a lot of talking about the background story to Valenhai. And before you know it, Steve's come up with pages and pages of background that he and I have been talking about a lot in terms of the history of the world itself, the families that rule the you know, the royal families, if you like, the nobles that rule the land, and lots of other goings-on in the land itself, including Kielvania to the south. I don't want to give too much away about the land. I realised I was about to start spilling my guts there. But it's been really good to work closely with him on the writing. And you're looking to do a lot more of the production since you've got the time to do it. Just basically get down to it and not have to worry about involving other people too often.
Yeah, it's about making things a bit more efficient because I think, you know, when you have these to-do lists and it's like, you know, send out scripts, check the lines for retakes, do casting, and then on top of that, the story's ongoing. And I really, you know, I've been looking to focus on production, on recording and casting, all the retake-based stuff and cleaning up the lines and getting them ready. And, you know, we thought it would be good for you to really take on the story. And, you know, Steve's put a lot of work in, and that's great to have him on board on that front. So I think this will work a lot better. I think it allows us both to concentrate on the two different aspects. And, it, you know, I'd like to think that a year or two down the line, the whole writing and production could become self-sufficient. The more people we involve, we can get, well, we've got other writers in, we can get other producers in. And I'd like to think that it could become a show that should somebody just, you know, well, not to be morbid, but should somebody die, it could keep going.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of shows out there, they have what you would call a single point of failure where, you know, the producer or writer, if they suddenly jacked it in or something happened to them, then the whole show's dead. because it's just that, you know, nobody's pushing it forward. And I'd like to think we could eventually get to the situation where Valenhai isn't reliant on any one person for anything, and it could just keep going and going. So, you know, long term, that's an ambition, but it starts with stuff like this. It starts with handing over control of various things.
Mm-hmm.
It is going to be a lot of hard work because we've got a lot of different writers. It's going to be hard to keep this consistency. It's going to be very challenging, but at the same time, very exciting and very rewarding.
Yeah, and we've already had quite a number of submissions, early drafts and the likes for stories. And we're holding off from going ahead and saying, right, that's the story finished, that's fine, we're happy with it, because we still need to develop certain things within the story world. But we've done that, we've come on leaps and bounds since we've had most of the submissions in, and soon we'll be able to go back and say, yes, but can you tailor that? And there's a very good reason for it, and here is the story writer's guide to back that up, and that's going to be very useful. The writer's guide is a document that we're working on consistently, and putting out new versions of it whenever we feel we've got to a new point. We're not expecting everybody to read it, every word of it and take it all in, because I think it's going to run to quite a number of pages, but it serves as a Bible for us to refer to so that we can then say, yeah, the story you've written, that's fine, but because of this section here, we want you to change that bit in your story. And that should work fine.
Yeah, so it's about having that background Bible, but maybe having a more succinct version for the writer to read.
Yeah.
If they don't want to spend the time reading through scores and scores of text. So that sounds good. The fact that we were talking about release schedules a few weeks ago, or maybe a month or two ago now, and I think we are all in agreement that we will wait till we've got maybe 6 to 8 episodes in the bag before we start releasing, and then we could release a show per month, and that'll give us that consistency that we spoke about a while back. I think, you know, having these, when we start to have episodes completed, these will be available for other writers to listen to, because it'll become an easier process over time, I'd like to think. Once people start hearing episodes, they get a real picture of the story world and the setting, and that'll become a lot easier for people. It's, you know, it's easy to listen to a show for a long time and really know the world and know certain characters or how things work.
Yeah.
So this is going to be the most challenging stage for everyone, just because nobody knows what anyone else is up to. It'll pull together over time, I'd like to think.
Yeah, and if we're using the same couple of composers, say, for the music, then that will help to establish consistency and familiarity as well. And yeah, as you say, that when we let writers and producers collaborate on each other's works and give them sneak previews, then they'll get to know the feel and the tone, and hopefully have something fairly similar. Of course, they want to produce something that's unique in a way, it's their own take on it, but it won't be wildly different. So it's not like you're listening to two completely separate pieces of work. Hopefully. That's the plan anyway.
Yep, exciting times. So all information on that project will be found at valenhai.com, or you could go to the show notes and find the link there.
So just a quick note about the proposed meetup in 2016 for audiophiles.
In the UK, we should add.
Well, it will be in the UK. If you are from further afield, you are welcome to attend. We will not be paying your expenses for getting here. But we would love to have you, that's for sure. So we were talking a wee while ago, Matthew, weren't we, that we thought about hiring somewhere in particular that's got a recording studio, somewhere that we could get a couple of people to stand, you know, not just like a little radio booth, but somewhere we would actually be able to record something. And then, you know, we could have it pre-written, obviously, meet up the night before to have a general chat, which we're thinking would be the main sort of thing we'd be doing anyway, and then on the day, record it, and then see what we can get out of it and see what kind of experience the whole thing will be.
Yeah, I think details that were sort of provisionally agreed so far were that it, It would be roughly September next year, 2016, in the north of England. And I don't know why this hadn't come up, maybe it had, but what about your old stomping ground, the University of Sunderland? Would that not be a decent venue if we could get it?
Absolutely. It indeed does have a radio drama studio for people to stand in with two microphones that are placed just right. So I'm going to be in touch with them about that and say, look, if we were planning this sort of thing, could we come maybe even the week before they actually start, you know, the academic year starts, so that we're not interfering with students getting in and using the studios themselves. If that sounds like the sort of thing that interests you, then just give us a little bit of positivity to know we're on the right track, and I shall get in touch with my alma mater. I'll probably wait until next month when they're more likely to be answering their academic email addresses.
So finally this week, the UK Podcast Awards, those take place in Manchester this year in September at New Media Europe. That's a conference down that way, and we'll be in attendance there. You can nominate us for a UK Podcast Award. I'll put the links to that in the show notes. Some of you have already, and thank you very much. If you have, it's just a quick process. You nip on there, you click nominate, you write your name and email, they email you, and then you confirm that you're a real person. It's as simple as that. And if we get enough nominations, we might make it into the finals, and that'd be a wee something to enjoy on the night. Because I want to get really drunk and swing a trophy around my head before being sick on the carpet and being escorted out of the building. That's always been an ambition of mine.
And it's something that would be worth recording for posterity as well. So, yes, please, let's make that happen. Who doesn't want that to happen?
The cleaner.
Yeah. So, yes, if you can, please do vote for us, and we would be eternally grateful.
By the way, I should add, you don't have to be from the UK or based in the UK to nominate us, because podcasting, of course, is an international thing. So that would have been a daft rule to enforce. Unfortunately, they haven't.
That's good. Excellent. So there's no excuse. None whatsoever. Get on it like one of those bonnets.
Is that us for the week? I think it might well be.
I think it is. I can't think of anything else. I would just say, get in touch if you want about anything at all, whether it's about anything we've discussed, something that's on your mind. I'm always aware that there's a million topics we could cover at any one point. And if you're really burning to have some advice about background dialogue, for instance, should you have characters in the background, and should they just be murmuring, or should they be actually saying something in particular? Maybe that's something you want to ask. Then ask it, I say. There's the Facebook group. Not everyone's on Facebook, I know, but some of you are. Come and join us in the Facebook group, Audio Drama Production Podcast. Email us, podcast@audiodramaproduction.com. There's no excuse. Get in touch.
Yep, and a closing thought for this week. It's a quote from Winston Churchill. He said, "Cheeky wee Nando's, mate, you absolute ledge."